Hear ye, hear ye. The Exiled Eagles are back. My name's Robin Seltzer and Paddies are coming to Australia.
Hooray.
Right. Yes, well, welcome to the Exiled Eagles. Here we are again. One of the most overexcited people in Australia is me, now that Paddies have announced they're coming over. And joining me today are three of the most over-badgered people in Australia. Three people that couldn't be more over the tour already, having it's been announced after a week. That is Lord Ticky Tech Quarty. How are you, Dale?
Last time I try and help anyone with any tickets, I'm good.
A very wise choice. Mark Organiser Werner, how are you doing?
Mate, I'm good. Yeah, it's adulation followed by some taxing and testing and texting. yeah, I'm good, mate. Very excited. I'll be a lot more excited once a few more things are ironed out. But, yeah, happy, joy, joy. The Palace are coming down under.
Good stuff. And the person that everyone, if you are frustrated, turn all your attention to this man. He's the one that you got to blame. It's Ned Rock.
Everything is my fault. I also stocked up all the toilet paper. I've got everything.
Ned's all Ned's everything details gone wrong in the country will come out later.
So direct all anger my way.
Do it.
Basically, listen. Exactly. So everyone that wants to, we will be passing up Ned's mobile number, email address,
yep, and 0404.
Address at the end of the pod. So if anyone has any questions about that, <topic. laughs> yeah. Exactly. So if anyone wants a ticket for anything Palace related, please speak to Ned. He's offered for his services. Okay, well, fellas, some great news, some incredible news, and some meh news. So the great news is Palace have won 3 out of 3. 3 in a bin, fantastic. The incredible news is Palace are obviously coming to Australia. The meh news is Roy Hodgson signed a year contract.
He is.
Oh, no, geez.
How is
this coming to Australia? We're not even 2 minutes into the pod and Rob's already sucking. This is unbelievable.
Hold on. No, I'm not sucking. I'm just saying that was meh. It wasn't bad news. It was bad.
I can't wait for him to justify 3 wins without conceding a goal and Hodgson.
In fairness, every time Rob whinges about Roy, we tend to go on a great little winning run. So the more he complains, the higher up the table will finish.
That's it. So if the back of the next team is Hambo and Nav, they go eat mutton rolls. So I'll take it as the Rob Hodgson rant. I'll take as much credit. So I'll go on another one today for everyone, and we'll probably end the season unbeaten. Although the season probably won't finish because of the coronavirus. So anyway, well, look, guys, we were in Australia. The biggest thing to happen to Australia is happening in July. Crystal Palace Football Club will be on these shores. So I think that's the best place to start. I mean, how excited are we all? How good is this? Marky Mark, have the boys are coming to your hometown, home country.
Oh, mate, it's look, it's just a bit surreal. It's literally a dream come true, and I often just find myself staring off into the distance, thinking, "Fuck, Palace are coming to Brisbane," and I can't believe it. Like, you know, they're coming to play in my backyard, a ground that I'm at pretty much every other weekend for big chunks of the year, watching the Roar and various other codes that go on there, and. To think that Palace are going to be running around there is, I'm not sure it's even really sunk in yet, mate, to be perfectly honest. Obviously very welcoming of it, and, you know, I was happy when they just came to the greater Asian Pacific Rim and played in Hong Kong. So to be able to trade in a plane ticket for an Uber fare to watch them play, very much welcome.
Mate, every time you have to pinch yourself to check your WhatsApp messages with all the people saying, where's my bloody ticket, when the ticket's coming up, and then... It brings you right back down to earth. All right, Dale, we're going to flick it over to you now. I mean, obviously, you're fantastic help for the Ticky Tech that's kind of thrown you in hot water with absolutely everyone. But, yeah, mate, can you believe that Palace are coming to Australia?
Mate, I can't. I didn't think this would be anything we would see as Palace fans. I didn't think we'd come over here. You know, you think about the club, though, a long affinity with Australians. We go all the way back from when Terry Venables was a coach, and, you know, we have a joke, but Nick Rizzo, we've had Mille Yednak, Craig Calvert, the infamous Calvert, you know, Foster,
Hopper,
Musket,
Craig Moore. Craig,
yeah, we've had a lot of players, so it's not really a surprise. The thing that's probably pissed me off most about this is it got announced and people were going on various soccer pages on Facebook saying, you know, oh, what the hell's this? Why'd you have these two teams come out? Or why'd they go and watch that trash? Well, do you know what? Don't go and watch it. Don't want you there. Don't care about who you are. Football doesn't revolve around the six teams in the top six positions of all the money. There are going to be X thousands of people to whom this is possibly a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And, you know, I can't wait for it to happen. And I hope everyone who wants to go can go. And I hope they all enjoy it. And I hope all three clubs involved just put on the best show possible for everyone and showcases what Australia can be about.
Just to please don't scare people. Yeah. They're already scared enough that there will be tickets available on the door. Everyone that wants to go will 100% be able to go. Just to put it out there. Yeah. All right, nostrils, Ned. What about you, mate?
Oh,
how are you feeling?
Yeah, I think it's still sort of, you know, one of those things that you just hasn't quite sunk in yet. You sort of sit there and go, oh, well, you know, the season's still going and there'll be this sort of inevitable pre-season tour of anywhere and no one really knows and cares about the games. And then all of a sudden you realise that actually this time I do want to go and see, you know, I do really care about, you know, seeing our second string players getting out there and having a run and hope that we get, you know, 15 minutes of, you know, Christian Benteke, if he's not, you know, sitting on the bench at the Euros, or, you know, being able to actually go and sort of see a team running around in a red and blue shirt that isn't Rob Seltzer for Sydney, for the CPFC Sydney team. If, you know, if there's open goals getting missed, it's by, you know, Jordan Ayew, not Rob.
Wow.
So I thought I'd just go for it early. I was just wondering.
Just to say, Jordan Ayew doesn't miss anymore.
Not anymore.
That's it.
But speaking of miss, just to confirm, Rob, you will be there, yeah?
I will indeed be there. Good hit there. I've got
I've got
a couple of things to take issue with what you just said there. Firstly, the open goal. Oh, it was a brilliant piece of skill. Just the wind took the ball away from me. It wasn't my fault. And secondly, you say lots of people running around in red and blue. I don't run. I plod.
Okay, I'll accept that one. I'll accept the second one. I apologise.
All right, so here's a question for all of you. So, I'm assuming not a lot of people are going to be coming out from England for it because obviously price and that type of stuff. Does that mean we're better fans than them now? Because they always tell us they're better fans than us because we don't go to games in England. But now they're Absolutely. Not going to come to a game in Australia. Are we better fans than them?
Yes.
Do you agree with that, Dale? We better fans?
Was there any question?
Go. Mark, unanimous. That's it.
Yeah, of course. I think we're more keen to travel. That's for sure. I know amongst us all, we'll you know, periodically there's always guys out of respective groups getting back and watching games in England during the season, and then, you know, we all went back and watched a cup final. A couple of us cruised up to Hong Kong to watch them in the pre-season there. So it'll be interesting to see what numbers do come out, but I don't think there'll be that
exactly.
many, mate,
so that,
to be honest.
So in short, what we're saying here at Exide Eagles, we are all better fans than the 26,000 that go week in, week out, and the 5,000 that goes all the way.
Pretty much.
So shove that in your pipes and smoke it. All right.
That's a great way to get new listeners and to keep them, isn't it? Well done, mate.
And also, if you can rate us five
Tell
stars
your friends.
On all the podcast apps, that'll be great. All right, so while we're on the subject, there are some loose plans in place at the moment. So whilst we're talking about it, because hopefully people won't have turned off just yet because it's still early in the podcast, why don't we do the... Mark, you want to give us like a loose... Don't have like a loose kind of itinerary, loose plans of where we're going to be, what we're going to be doing whilst we're in Brisbane.
Yeah. Sure. Well, of course, this is fairly recent news. It's only, a week old today. So lots of wheels to be put in motion. Most of those are. We've set up or ratified a base camp for us here, excuse me, at the Pig and Whistle at Riverside in town here. Now, that's English Pub, which is a chain here. All the Brisbane fraternity generally go there and watch the games. So, you know, you'll probably bump into a few Hammers in there as well. They've looked after us for the games 10 years plus, had playoff finals and cup finals there. And whatnot, manager's going to put on a bit of a drink special for us. I don't know what that is as yet. Viewers, don't email me for prices or what manufacturers will or
email
won't be
Ned.
On special.
Email Ned.
Just be special,
that.
So that'll be like cool. Email Ned. So we'll have that loosely as base camp. People can come and go from there. That's just in the city, not far from the ground. Nice pub by the river. Then we've got generally all the meetup guys that were up here for 2018. In Brisbane for the national meetup. We're going to head out to Bacchus Brewery, which is owned by a friend of the show, Ross Kenrick. So I've been in touch with him. He's happy to have us out there again for, which is probably going to be a late morning lunchtime gig on game day, figuring there won't be any sort of club meet and greet type things on that day. So that's a good day to get out there. And then we'll head into town and a bit of a pub crawl. Certainly, maybe, well, yeah, in the city, back to base in the city, and then we'll get up to Caxton Street and do the march down there to the game, and then, you know, all use our tickets in hand and go into the game, and we'll be led by our capo, Ned Rocky, down the front there and get in on it.
And that's it's awesome. It's sounding very awesome. There's some sort of exciting plans in place that the boys, that Mark and Ned and Dale, are working very hard behind the scenes. I don't work hard doing that stuff because I'm just lazy. So everything that's done is nothing to do with me. But there are some very exciting things happening. So look, we encourage everyone to make the effort. I know, obviously, Paddy's in Australia, so people will make the effort. But I mean, if this does make its way across the shores, then please come to Australia, see the hospitality that we can offer, and if you're in Australia and you're on the fence, you're not sure, then please come over, come and make an effort.
I think I'll just add to that. You know, we had a chat before on WhatsApp, guys, and we said we're nothing official. We are four guys who are Palace fans, and we'll chuck Tony in it as well, who do a podcast, who just want to have fun and are trying to organise Palace fans to be together and for us to turn a little bit of Townsville and a little bit of Brisbane into Selhurst Park. So we just want everyone to be a part of that. So please, if you want to jump on board, do. If you don't, we don't care. It's all good, no issues. And the one thing we haven't mentioned is that we are aiming for the first time to have a full complement for a live pod. And hopefully at some stage we'll have some special guests, but, you know, who knows?
Yeah, exactly. Keep a bit of sizzle for that one, Dale.
Yeah.
I just want to add to Rob quickly. As I said, we're a week into these revelations of this trip. Obviously there's stuff to add that will come from the club, you know, maybe an open training session, a meet and greet. We will be liaising with the club as best we can, and we'll keep everyone abreast of those things, obviously. You know, guys did a similar thing in Hong Kong, so what I've rattled off is just sort of top of mind for us now to do. There'll be some more officialdom type stuff that comes to light closer to the event, and as Dale said, we're not official, we're just Exiled Eagles, what it says on the tin, and looking forward to welcoming everyone from far and wide. And mate, I'm chuffed here. I want to show off my city and my state, and
very much so. Can only echo that, guys. As you said, in all the events in inverted commas that we put on, in another inverted commas, open to absolutely everyone. If you want to come. There'll be Palace fans, there'll be booze, there'll be awful chat. I will probably be there. No, I will be there. Ha, ha, ha. I will be there.
It's very big
of you. If you don't want to come, yeah, exactly. You're welcome. If you don't want to come, don't feel inverted commas. Don't feel pressured to come. There's absolutely no pressure at all. But, you know, come to the game, have a sing song or whatever. I think this, as Mark says, it's only been announced for a week, so I think a lot of stuff's happened. So well done to you boys for doing all that stuff in a week. It's very exciting times ahead for that tour. All right, so we're going to touch on it briefly. Roy has signed a contract. It's official now. you all know my thoughts and on where it should have been. It's done. If anyone's got anything to say on it, we can. Otherwise, we can just move straight past that, just announcing that on the pod. So if anyone care, or we're just going to move straight on.
I just hope that you get a chance to have a chat to him when he's out here.
Oh, good. I've got some tactical
Roy
tweaks
on the
that
pod?
he could implement in my
Roy on the pod.
On the pod.
Get Roy on the pod.
Get Roy. 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 Get Roy on the pod.
Get Roy on the pod.
I'd be like, we could.
Five-year plan, couldn't do it.
We'll get like a cool little jingle and be like, and this is Robin Roy.
And then, absolutely, that can be arranged. I'll do the jingle. Someone else arrange the interview. And happy days.
And I want us to be in a room, that is just like a table, like a little round table, two wooden chairs, and like a lamp that goes right in the middle of the table, and just us two facing each other.
Behind you, Rob.
You sit there and go, thank you, sir. I appreciate the amount of time and effort that you put into the club that I love, and I hope you stay forever.
Obviously, Jesus. I'm not stupid.
The only thing I'll say on Roy and his contracts is it's Wednesday night. I think I've listened to five different football podcasts, and you know, it echoes everything we've said in every pod bar the last one. It's a safe pair of hands. We know what we're getting.
Yeah,
it's fine. Yeah, we're gonna be okay. Let's be honest. It's
Snorfest FC.
Can I chuck in, Rob, for my literally 30 seconds on it? Yeah, not going to say anything. Hasn't been said, you know, knows the club, better the devil you know, safe hands, all that jazz. No sort of, you know, very minimal risk and statistically with injuries and where we are and points, you know, there's a lot to cheer about. I mean, you know, we could be in a lot worse position. One thing I did want to mention that I don't think it's tapped into a great deal. And that, I reckon, is probably his relationship with the players and stuff. I reckon they've really bought in
100%.
On Hodgson Ball.
100%.
And, you know, I'm sure management would be across how much... I mean, that's, you know, you lose a room, that's it, you cook. Doesn't matter what talent you have. So I reckon they've really bought in and all things considered with injury and stuff where we are. You know, if it goes on, could crack that glass ceiling and maybe squeeze a little bit more out of the lemon. We'll see.
Look what's happening at Palace, right, under Roy, who is a 72-year-old man who has obviously got the likes of Wilf on side, and he's been able, we'll come on to this later, I'm sure, he's been able to leave his captain out the side and it hasn't caused any issues, etc., etc. Compare that to what you see happening at Tottenham, where the special one is dogging out players left, right and centre. People obviously aren't interested in being there. They're not playing for him already. I would just say, to me, Roy, if you look at what he's doing as a 72-year-old who might be banned from the Premier League because of coronavirus, you've got to just take your hat off to the guy.
I can't talk about Spurs.
Yeah.
Rob, you're not allowed to speak.
No, I'm saying I can't talk about Spurs. A lot of my mates in the WhatsApp group are Spurs fans, and hearing their whining is actually tragic. You're like, are you joking? You're like, what, the Champions League finals last year? That wasn't too bad. They've been in the Champions League for the last 5 years. You'd honestly think...
Yeah, but it's all relative.
Sod off. Anyway, all right, we're not a Spurs podcast. Who cares? Crap, up the Palace. Right, yeah, so that's a 3-1-0 wins on the spin. So including that, so it's a 1-0 win against Newcastle, a Newcastle team that, let's be honest, I reckon CPFC Sydney would have given them a game. Then a very enjoyable derby win, which I'm gutted. I was going to put Palace as... I'm in a WhatsApp group for last man standing. You pick a team every week. And I had a feeling we were going to beat them. And I put Chelsea instead. And if I put Palace, I'd have won 12 grand. So there's your...
Never bet on...
Exactly.
Palace.
I know, but I had a good... I had a gut feeling we were going to win. And then even...
Never bet
I didn't. And I didn't win 12 grand. So bollocks. And then almost more enjoyable, I'd say, a 1-0 win over Watford. So, I mean, let's talk. We could.
Our biggest rival.
We'll come on. Let's start with Watford, because I don't think we need to discuss Newcastle. They were so bad. We should have put in Beaton and more, but 1-0 win was fantastic. So we'll concentrate more on the Brighton-Watford thing. So, Dale, you've just kind of piped up there. So you think Watford is a bigger rival either than Brighton. So kind of over to you with why you think that is and, yeah, no, what's been happening in the recent history and why you're so happy about it.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to take it back to... So for me, I see it as a bigger rivalry, okay? So I'm going to go all the way back to 93, Jesus. 94. We won the championship. Last game of the season was home against Watford. It was the last day of the Homesdale and they beat us 3-0. And it was a bit crap because you lost 3-0, but you still won the trophy. It'd be nice to see us win the league with a win, finish the league off season off with a win. Anyway, jump forward, promotion year. I think we win or we lose 3-2, I can't remember. We draw 2-2. Obviously, you're playing in the final. Zaha does Zaha, wins the penalty. Kevin Phillips scores a penalty. We go up, they're pissed off. Harry the Hornet starts playing his game. Zaha's a diver, blah, 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 blah. We've got Kapuwe's assault on Zaha, which, you know, I still struggle to believe how, don't understand how he never got anything in when he got looked at again after the fact. And generally, they're close games. They've become, I've said it on previous pods, they've become probably up until this season a model of a club you want to be if you're a smaller club. And there's just rivalry there, which I think is more relevant in the modern times than, and I'm not afraid to admit it on the pod, until I met up with the Palace guys in Australia, I didn't know about the Brighton rivalry. And some people will go, what's that about? That you can't be a Palace fan. Well, I didn't. My dad wasn't part of it. He was a black man in 70s and 80s England. He tried to avoid going to football matches because of the racism that happened. He used to live on the same road as Selhurst and he would get up in the morning and leave. So he didn't know anything that had gone on. He never told me that. I played football on Saturdays or rugby or some sports. I never went to Palace Brighton matches. So it was only when I got here. I had been to Watford games and it's always been a bit of a fight and a battle. And I just think it's a bigger rivalry for the modern era of football. Glad we beat them 1-0. King Jordan, are you?
Thank you very much so. What do you think, Ned?
Look, I think I can sort of see Dale's point in terms of, I think it probably maybe has a little bit more relevance these days just due to we've played them in a few more bigger matches than perhaps we have Brighton sort of a more recent sort of point. I think it's one of those ones that sort of comes down to do you go with the historical rivalry or do you sort of have a little bit more of a look at the on-field stuff in terms of when you think about rivalries. Is it more on-field? Is it more off-field? So I guess for the on-field stuff of late, then I can sort of see where that was coming from, and I think that's probably a fair point. Just for general, dislike of a club for no apparent reason, which always makes a good rivalry. Brighton comes up and you go, we just have to win that. Not a huge amount that's happened in the last sort of recent history. Obviously, there was the year we went up was great, but we can say us taking Glenn Murray off them and them sort of having him back. I mean, there's sorts of little flash points, but so, I mean, I can sort of yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where you sort of go, do you go historical or do you go on pitch? I think I'm just happy to beat both, to be honest.
Very much so. Going him up from an Aussie point of view.
I agree. I can side with Dale. Very much and agree with him what he said. Due to the fact that I only started supporting Palace as an Australian over in London in 2005. Was told when I was over there, Brighton were the mob that they're up against. Didn't really know why, and I only read up about it a year or two ago. So, given that, I got up to Vicarage Road on New Year's Eve 2005, sat in the home end with a mate who's a Watford supporter, and we rolled them 3-0, and so that was joyous and testing all in one. And since then, I just have more beef with Watford, well and truly. So, whilst I respect the given rivalry with Brighton and so forth, for me, I'm especially Kapu and that lately, for me, I'm much keener to roll the sleeves up.
I think Charlton's our main rival.
Oh, have you seen them? I've been winding up. Jeez. They're in some serious
trouble. That's a joke, by the way, for anyone listening.
Bit of trouble.
Sort of, you know, thinks I might have been serious.
Right. I mean, if you go, if we're talking recent stuff, then you'd have to say Watford, wouldn't you? Just the way that, I mean, it's just so weird. They don't actually try and play against us. It's just the fact that they just want to kick the living shite out of us. Like, it's strange. I mean, and let's talk a little bit about the game. Let's talk a little bit about Saturday. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a referee lose control so early of a football match in my life. I mean, he had no clue from minute one through to minute 90. And I mean, Troy Deeney's come out and said we actively go out to foul Wilfried Zaha. So what I don't understand is, I mean, Wilf's obviously got this reputation, so referees look for him to dive. But surely they listen to these type of comments and say, right, this is going to be happening. Let's look out for it. They don't. I mean, yes, it was handbags, but when Capu puts his head into Wilf, is that any different, really, to what Luca did to Tom Huddleston when he got bitten?
Mate, let me tell you, Wilf was lucky there. He's
in the face.
He's been booked once. He's put his hand in the face. And you know what? That's what Watford were trying to do. They would take it in turns to kick him because they can't all get booked one after the other, although we say they should. Wilf plays up. He got pulled back for the drag on Capoue. Now, that wasn't a yellow card, but the referee at least was consistent and gave four yellow cards for the same thing. So, granted, you cannot put your hand in a player's face. And this isn't me doing the whole, oh, bloody hell, Wilf. They goaded him. And I hate the fact that he rose to it because he actually walked away. And MacArthur, I think if you look at the footage again, MacArthur at one stage looks at Wilf and says, Wilf, get the fuck away. That's what he said. They knew. The players knew. The players have to grab him. Someone else grabbed him as well right at the start of that incident and pulled him away from it. The teams know. We said it about Ward-Prowse. They know what to do to get him offside. And they know that if they do it, he won't play as well and he might get sent off like he did against Southampton. I can't blame teams for doing it. I cannot.
I certainly agree with the sentiment. Like, Ward-Prowse lives in his head rent-free. He does it very well. What I will argue with is Capu knew exactly what he was doing and there was a head into face. So Wilf pushes back. Wilf probably would have, I mean, yes, should have got a second yellow for it. If Wilf gets a second yellow for it, in my opinion, although it wasn't a full-on headbutt, Capu, he puts his head in the face. That's a headbutt to a face. That's a red card. If he's going to put Wilf for a second yellow for a little push like that in retaliation to someone put his head in his face, then the other guy's got to go too. Because he knew exactly what he was doing.
I agree.
And the fact that he wasn't even going to get booked until Chiarte and him had a row blows my mind.
The referee wasn't going to book either of them, so I'll take that. He wasn't going to book either of them. If he books one, he's got to book the other. So that's where we have to be careful.
Exactly.
And at the end of the day, right, Watford will probably sit there and go, us about Capoue, Palace without Zaha. They'd fancy themselves 10 against 10 if we don't have
Zaha. We're 1-0 up. They weren't going to break us down.
Mate. Whether they were, whether they weren't, it doesn't matter. If it was 10 against 10 and we didn't have Zaha, they would fancy their chances to get the equaliser.
The whole Watford versus Wilf thing, I feel like when we play them, they put... I appreciate that Wilf is, you know, our best player and our best creative outlet. But you sort of sit there sometimes when we're playing Watford and you go, we're not that good. Why are you putting all this effort into trying to get one player sent off when you could just beat us?
I agree with that. I agree with that.
I mean, completely. They've just gone and played 100%. Liverpool, who were the best team in the league off the park week earlier. Yeah. And they've come up against Palace and gone, well, the only way we can beat them is to get Wilf sent off. So, I mean, I sort of sit there and look at that and go, well, at the end of the day, if every time they come, they're going to spend 90 minutes trying to goad Wilf and forget about the actual football part of things. I mean, you can say that, yeah, Wilf gets wound up, but doesn't that mean really if anyone's in anyone's head, surely it's Wilf in theirs?
Oh, he is in theirs. And look, is it two seasons ago when we were losing 1-0 or 2-1 or something, and we won 3-2 in the last 10 minutes, and Wilf scored. They put two right backs on at one stage, and Wilf done them both. So they are worried about him. They are truly worried about him. And you're right, Ned. He is in their head. But I also think people like Capoue are in his head. to a certain extent.
Oh, like, I'll agree with that, but I think Wilf's in 11 of their players' heads, and they've got two of their players in his head, and you're sort of going, well, that's a win for us, isn't it?
Yeah. If they played football on Saturday, because let's be honest, that it was for a long period of time, it was all Watford, right? I watched that game and thought, this is Watford, we're not going to hold on to this. And they slowly got out of the game and we came more into it. If they played football, they could have beaten us.
I don't think that's the first time.
Yeah. I mean, I'd agree that I'd say Ward-Prowse is in Wilf's head more than Kapure, because I think Kapure goes looking for Wilf, because Wilf's in Kapure's head as much as Kapure's in Wilf's. And then, like, and he goes looking to foul him. He goes looking. And he goes looking to hurt him.
I think that is the difference with Kapure. I think a Ward-Prowse, and I hate giving him credit because I really don't like him. But he worries about Wilf because he is the fullback that plays against Wilf. So it makes sense for him to worry about the player that he is directly against. Kapure just sort of goes, and even then, he just tries to goad him. He doesn't actively try and hurt the guy too much. Like, he'd give him a bit of a kick, but he doesn't actively go out trying to hurt him. Whereas Kapure, you sort of like, there's just a few too many challenges over the time that you sort of go, I mean, I'm all for, you know, trying to goad a player and wind him up or whatever it is. But, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you're talking to professional footballers. He probably takes it a bit far.
Go on, Mark.
Off the back of that, that's right. Watford should just worry about playing football more so than trying to wind Wilf up. And in saying that, I can't help but feel, I've said this before about various other things, but if we've got someone like Millet running around back on the pitch, Kapure ain't getting away with half of that shit, or he's going to be rethinking a lot of it, because I'm sure that man might be covering a bit of the spread.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I'm missing. Where's that hard man shoring that up in the middle?
Yeah.
And just steaming in, you know?
And I think...
I don't see it.
I'll just say, on your point as well, Ned, if you look at that challenge which caused the kerfuffle, the handbags, Kapure basically knew exactly what he was doing, and he gave Wilf the eyes afterwards, gave him the verbals. And for me, that's when a referee and probably the referees association need to, because they do go back and look at the games, they review it, they need to look at it and go circle and go, right, next time these guys play, this is what's going, we have to look out for, because it's there for all to see. And it's, I'm not saying this just because it's Wilk, we see it in other games as well, in other teams, somebody's going to get seriously hurt by that sort of stuff, and it's fuggery. All right, we've seen it in the past with Roy Keane, what he did to Alfie and Haaland, and it is fuggery, and it will happen again, and if it happens to Wilf, we'll be fuming, and if it happens to someone else, we'll be fuming. And Gary Cahill, from my mind, is the sort of player we need in this situation. He will defuse that shit, and he will give Kapure a little tap on the bum and say, mate, fix up. And that's the sort of leadership we need in the club. It's unfortunate that he's 80 yards away when it happens, but that's the sort of leadership we need to stop this stuff from happening. We will.
Very similar to Dale Quarty to Rob Seltzer when we were playing against the Chelsea Supporters Club, when I was going to rip that guy.
Oh, yeah.
I was going
to... That's good.
I was going to kill him. He was going to get an absolute tonking. Well done, Dale.
Yeah, thanks, mate.
Yeah, like, well, so that's Watford. And obviously, let's touch on Brighton quickly, and then we're going to talk about certain individuals. Nice glasses. Four shot glasses. Taking them to Brisbane.
Yeah, mate.
Do we all get one? I mean,
is it free with a ticket?
Is everyone with? I was going to say, everyone that wants a ticket, do they get one of them?
Okay, hold on a second. Let's just address this ticket issue, just so everyone knows, all right? So, good people of Exiled Eagles land, I have spoken to Ticketek. We are getting tickets. 400 reserved in Brisbane, 200 in Townsville. If you have come in contact with us via the spreadsheet we sent around and said you want a ticket, you will get a ticket. Do not worry. If you haven't, don't worry. We probably have a spare ticket for you. What I don't want to hear is people badgering Mark and Ned about nonsense who we've never heard of before. Sit down, fix up, rest up, all right? Because your tickets are coming. If you don't want to be a part, just go and buy some and fuck off.
I thought you were going to say if you come into contact with us, you've got to have a 2 week.
Well, that too. I mean, that's a given.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, of course not.
That's not because of coronavirus, mate.
All right, so we briefly touched on that. You had to get that out, Jesus. We touched on Watford. Let's briefly touch on Brighton because it's been a couple of weeks since we beat them. But I thought it was a very good professional performance. They huffed and puffed, and just had a couple of chances they should have taken, but so did we. And to be honest with you, I just thought there was a bit of a gulf between the two teams. I thought we did exactly what we wanted to do in the game, and they played the ball around a lot, but there wasn't much cutting edge. They had the two main chances were a breakaway, and when Gyro tried to intercept the ball, but kind of flipped it over with one of the best passes you're ever going to see, over the top of Dan onto Morpay's foot. But other than that, I mean, I wasn't that worried watching that game. Well, I mean, what do you think, Ned?
I felt. We were comfortable throughout, but there were just, as you said, there was one or two chances. That Solly March miss was awful. That should have been Brighton one up. Admittedly, we had a couple of our own, but I mean, at that time in the game, where we've sort of been on top and had quite a few moments, I think if they hit us with a sucker punch there, I think our conversation at the moment's a lot less chirpy. I think it was nice. Because we've had a few Brighton games in a row where the players haven't really turned up, and it was nice to see that they were definitely up for it. We played well, we defended well, they were ready for Brighton to throw everything they have at us. I mean, we knew that, I mean, usually if you get a team that, I mean, I can say this now because the game's finished, they were the, I mean, at the time they were the only team in England that hadn't won a game this year. I think they're still the only team in England that hasn't won a game this year. So you're sort of sitting there going, that is correct. Standard Palace, guaranteed 1-0 loss, despite dominating for 90 minutes, cop a sucker punch goal, lose 1-0. That's just standard Palace. But to, you know, be able to respond, react, get our creative opportunity, score the goal, and then hold on quite competently, probably should have had, well, definitely should have had one at the end, speaking of awful misses. I think it was a good performance. I was, I was very pleasantly surprised by it. As for a 1-0 win, it just had that sort of slight air of comfort that you don't usually get, which was quite nice.
Bloody 12 grand, idiot. Well, Mark, what you
I'm
reckon?
So happy,
Mark. How are you feeling watching the game?
Yeah. Much the same sentiment, mate, for a 1-0. It was a very comfortable 1-0 watching it. I was never really on tender hooks with it. Another one would have been nice to put it to bed, and I really felt for Wilf at the end there because we all know how much he hates Brighton. Tried to put on the outside of his right when he should have, I guess, just used his left and slot at home. But anyway, get the chocolates, still get the 3 points, and the last, I think, at least three or four games, they did the double on us last season, or three times, did us in the cup as well, I think. And I don't think we turned up in any of those. So just the fact that we were, everyone was there and accounted for was pleasing to start off with. And then, King Jordan Ayew banging another one in for us, absolutely paying for himself on a weekly basis and was never any real doubt. So it was quite comfortable. And I think going back to Brighton, Watford, who do you hate more? For selfish reasons, have soft spots for Brighton, being our national keeper plays for them, and Aaron Moy, the only two guys getting regular Premier League minutes. They're playing our national team, so I'm always wanting them to do well, obviously, for selfish reasons. We at least did have some World Cup qualifiers coming up in March and June. They've since been postponed because of the coronavirus. We've also got the Copa America that starts on the 13th of June. No word on that as yet. So I'd like to have all the boys firing, but happy for them to have a day off when they're playing Palace, of course.
And your final thoughts, Dale, for a minute on?
Mate, King, are you doing a business? best £2.5 million you'll ever see spent in the Premier League. Let's just roll on, keep on rolling on. I think we've got 6 of the current top 7
18 points
this season, so let's just hope it doesn't let's just hope it doesn't peter out. But you know, we're going to win some, we're going to lose some, let's just keep the faith. And Bournemouth next, let's get the win.
Very much so. Right. All right, what's even more impressive is, and we're going to pick on a couple of players here. Like, for example, Christian Benteke's return to form. I think he's been absolutely fantastic, apart from scoring in the last few games, turning, running with the ball. I think it's been picked up on every other podcast, so I don't think we need to wax lyrical too much about it. Obviously, we mentioned the Lord Ayew, who's worth his weight in gold at the moment. Well, 15 points worth of gold. It's been superb, but we've done it with arguably, was it our fifth choice centre-back pairing initially? Would be at the start of the season, Cahill and Dan. And then obviously Luke has not been playing, as Dale mentioned earlier on. James McCarthy's been, I thought, been very good for this game and a half he's played. Jairo was really good when he came on against Brighton as well, just the way he reads the game. So, I mean, would you change anything? Would you bring Tompkins back? Would you bring Sacco back? Would you bring Luka back? For example, those three players who you would, at the start of the season, would say maybe their first names on the team sheet. Would you make any of those changes?
Sacco, no. I would leave him on the bench and put him on the transfer list for various reasons. One's the money he chews up in wages, and two's I don't think he's that great. Luka, it's a tough one. He's your captain. You should say he should play, but we haven't looked that bad about him. I think Kerete's been an absolute monster in the midfield, and he's his national captain, so he's got the leadership qualities. Jimmy Mack has been, I don't think he played that badly against Watford. Everyone else said he wasn't great. Look, he is a 7.5 out of 10 player every week, and sometimes you just need them. And James Mack has been, he's been solid. You know, we talk about, do we have that mongrel and bulldog in us? That's him, I think. And it's tough because Jairo came in, he played really well at left back when he's a centre mid. As I said, Luka's the captain. Tompkins, I mean, only reason you'd put him in is because he's half a decade younger than Dan, but at the moment we don't necessarily need to change it. It's not screaming for changes, so you just leave it.
That's a very Roy approach of you.
It has changed.
I think it's a case of he'll change a team if there's an injury, he'll change a team. And then if he won't change it again until there's another injury, so which I assume is what will happen now.
Correct.
I think in terms of the three players that Rob spoke about, I think Sacco, I fully agree with you, Dale. In terms of for the money that he gets, he's just not on the pitch enough. When he is, fantastic defender, but I mean, if he's not going to be on the park, then we can't be paying him the amount of money that we're paying him. When he does come back into the squad, he's always shaky for the first 3 or 4 games. So he needs that run of games to get into it. And he just can't get through that run of games without either getting himself sent off or injured or just doing something stupid. For the value, not there. Luka, I think all season has just been really disappointing when he's played. His set pieces have been terrible. So we've not really looked a threat at all. When he's not there, we get someone like a PVA taking some quite dangerous set pieces, or other players who seem to, which is surprising because he was fantastic at those last year. He also just doesn't, I don't know what it is, he just doesn't quite seem to be there. So I'm more than happy for Kiate, who again I think has been fantastic, to be staying in that position. Centre back's a tough one because, I mean, Scott Dan has had quite a few injury issues in the past, and he's getting on, so I mean, you wouldn't, if Tompkins was to come in, I'd understand that. I think it's good at the moment to continue giving Dan a bit of a run of games. That'll help him keep his confidence up. And I mean, if he's in form, as you said, why change it? But we also know that we've then got a James Tompkins to come in if anything does happen to him or Cahill. Because, I mean, it's a very experienced centre-back pairing, which is a polite way of saying they're pretty old. So to have a Tompkins there currently as a backup, I mean, you would think by the end of the season he'll be back in that starting lineup. But, you know, he's got to wait his turn. Yeah. I mean, Dan's done nothing to deserve getting dropped, so I've got no issues with how it is at the moment.
Mark him up.
Sounds good, yeah. Just reiterate that. I think the centre-back pairings at the moment, I think it's their shirt to lose, which will probably invariably come in the form of injury before too long. But at the moment, they're going well, and nothing wrong with having a couple of old heads at the back and Cahill really coming on in a leadership role, which he would be anyway, whether he had the captain's armband or not. He's just that type of bloke that'll, you know, take charge of a game and marshal the troops and get on the chirp at the back, which is what you want. Great to have, you know, the likes of Tompkins and Saka in the wings. But, yeah, Saka, we probably want to get off the wage bill. Now that we've got 39 points, and let's face it, all but guaranteed mathematical safety, that'll come in a bit. But I wouldn't mind getting Gyro back on in midfield somewhere. I think it was very hardly done by to get player of the month and then knock it on the pitch the following week when PVA came back. So I'd move him up the field a little bit, leave Luca on the bench, have the two J-Max in the middle there with him. Get Townsend and Zaha on the wings and Ayew in the middle. He's awesome in traffic and loves bustling his way through defence. So if you've got Zaha and Townsend left and right and even swapping over, that's just, you know, which way do you look? Where do you go? And if all those things started clicking, I think it'll be some exciting football to watch, a little bit more pleasing to the eye than what we've seen of late. I know a lot of that's due to injury and so on and so forth. But, yeah, just for a change, that'd be
a bit rough on Benteke.
I'd love to see it. Yeah, so I was going to say that. He's been fantastic. I'd love to see Gyro in midfield, though. But I think Benteke has been superb the last three games, to be honest.
Yeah. I've been on here and said he's got to go and this and that, which I think is fair for his return and his wages. We've got to get him off the books. But I've reconciled himself to myself a lot more, and rather than think of him as a striker, just think of him as like a holding forward. And if I can tell that to myself in my head,
I love that. But one more time, that's a great position description.
Wasn't it on the championship? If you played Championship Manager, there was a defensive striker, a defensive forward. Yeah. What? But anyway,
holding forward. Anyway,
for me, there's no sentiment in football, right? If there's a better player available in your position, and they come back from injury, they get the position. If with regards to Mamadou Sakho, have we got money value for money? No, we discussed that in length in the last pod. Absolutely not. Do I think we should get rid of him? Probably yes. Who would take him? I have absolutely no idea. He's going to want 120 grand a week. He's injury prone. There's clubs that have the money that they can throw around 120 grand a week are Champions League clubs. None of them are going to get Mamadou Sakho. They're not going to take a risk on Mamadou Sakho when there's other younger players around there. Technical footballers at the back, he's the best player we've got, comfortably. And we play higher up the pitch with him. He starts, yes, he's got the mistake, but his range of passing is fantastic. He's reading the game is fantastic. So would I like to see him in there? Yes, I probably would, to be honest with you. I'd like to see Sakho and Cahill back in there. I know they played that one game, against Spurs, but Sakho wasn't ready. I'd quite like to see Sakho and Cahill in. I think that'd be fantastic. Dan's been brilliant, absolutely brilliant, but that's what you want from a squad. And this is where, again, the criticism comes with Pon Hodgson is, he's got Townsend on the bench. Why don't you bring him on? Give him 30 minutes. Because what happens if the next game, if Ayew gets injured after minute one? Yeah. Townsend's not match fit. What happens if, you know, has to come on the pitch after a minute? He's not really match fit. Or he goes down or whatever. He needs to use his squad more. He still needs to do that.
Whilst I agree he does need to use his squad more, I do agree with that 100%. We've all said it. You also can't just play players for playing sake. So you can't, we're not we are playing in games where we are winning. Look at our last three games. We've won 1-0. They to varying degrees of comfort. And whilst, you know, the Brighton game, I thought he would bring on Townsend for the last 10 minutes to run it, to just to, you know, waste time, fresh legs, whatever. But you can't necessarily just bring players on for the heck of it for half an hour.
I very much agree with that. But we're not talking about bringing on like an untried youngster. We're talking bringing on an England international star like Andrews Townsend. I mean, Jordan Ayew works his socks off. He works his absolute bollocks off. And yes, you can keep going for 90 minutes, but maybe after, on occasion, just 75 minutes, give Andros the last 15 just to run around. You know, he's not, I wouldn't say he hasn't got as much in the locker with skill-wise, but he does all right. He keeps the ball well. He works hard.
Yeah.
And my concern is, it's like the cricket thing, right? If you're batsman number three, you have to be prepared to come in on the second ball because the opener could go out. So, yeah. If you're on the bench, you have to be prepared to start to get on the pitch after 35 seconds if the player gets injured in your position. At the moment, it won't work if that happened to us. So that would be...
Well, we say it won't
work. Well, in fairness, Dale, we kind of have seen
that it doesn't work. We don't know.
I mean, we started the season having an absolute blinder of a season, and then all of our players got injured.
Yeah.
And now all of our players are back again, and turns out we're quite good again. So I think you sort of can argue that you have seen it.
But that would be the same for anyone in that situation. A club of our stature, if you ripped out 9 players from the first team squad, that would happen.
Oh, for sure.
But I think agree on, with that, on Rob's point though,
well, decimated.
Go, well, if that player gets injured, the player who's coming in is not match fit. If they're not match fit, then they're more likely to get injured. So you're going, well, there's 9 players out, well, 4 of them might have been injuries that we were going to get anyway, but 5 of them are the players that are coming in to replace him. Yeah. That's our fault for not having match fit players.
I completely agree with all of that. What I would have liked to have seen Roy do, not so much now, but what he should have done at Christmas, was gone, all right, so we've just played 2 games in 4 days. Game number 3, I'm going to take out 1, 2, 3 and put in ABC. But no, we didn't do that. We just went the same players. And that's where I completely agree. There's a time, Wenger used to say it, players are in the red zone, they're redlining or whatever. And I think with us, players get to the red line, go past the red line and start going around again to get back to it. And that is the issue. There's a time when we could have been using the squad better and we ended up having to use the squad because we had no one else to use.
Very much so. And that's my concern. As I said, would I bring Saka back? Yes. Would I bring Townsend? No, I wouldn't bring him back in the starting lineup now, but I would definitely give him 20 minutes to get him up to speed. Luka, probably not at the moment, because I think that midfield 3 is working better. But to Mark's point, I would love to see Gyro have a run in that midfield. I'd love to see him there.
Just on your bringing Andros back in for the last 10 minutes, did you not see Benteke and Ayew in the 93rd minute against Watford? That was the best part of the match.
That was
they looked like Bambi on ice trying to control the football. Yeah. It was the most out of control.
It was
control
a beautiful sight. It was
life.
A beautiful sight.
So basically, it was like Anthony Taylor refereeing the game.
Yeah, move on, Rob.
Okay, you next. Move on.
All right. Shut up. Just shut up. All right. It's time for everyone's favourite part of the pod. The ones that make it this far, it's time for the Aussie game. I'm still calling it the Aussie game because I have absolutely no name for it. And we're going to have obviously a little bit of a chat about A-League 2. So I'm handing it over to our resident Aussies, Nedrock and Marky Werner. So what's going on in A-League and Aussie games?
My team's shit. I'll let Mark speak.
Sort of on the A-League front... Brisbane Roar doing well, climbing the ladder at the right time of the season. I think we're about 1-5 out of our last 7. Good 3-1 win on the weekend. Scored a couple of first half goals. I think out of our 27 goals, we'd only scored 4 of them in the first half this season. So to get Yeah, very much so. So to get two in the first half was quite a delight, and then went on with it to win 3-1. Of course, it's exciting times for the Roar, as it was announced during the week. They'll be playing Crystal Palace up in Townsville and then West Ham at Cbus Stadium down on the Gold Coast. And I can't help but feel they've probably got the right to be a little bit pissed off, because they've got two Premier League teams coming to their patch and they don't get to play either of them at their home ground. So, yeah, anyway, that's neither here nor there, but I'm sure they would have loved to trundle out at Suncorp and have a go at one or two of them, as they did to Liverpool a couple of years ago. So that's it. Raw Women, they're at the final, so I've stopped watching that. The Matildas have the return leg of the last qualifying game for the Tokyo Olympics, pending they happen, of course, with coronavirus.
Can I just say, Mark, on that, how funny, I don't know if you've seen the advert, I think, going on Fox, where they're saying, one last assignment. Can our Aussie women do it? They're 5-0 up.
The cliffhanger in Vietnam tonight, yeah, taking in a slender 5-0 lead for the second leg. So I don't really see Vietnam putting six past us without us scoring.
No.
But, yeah, that'll be a bit of fun to watch. As I said, the men's Socceroos World Cup qualifiers have been cancelled. That was scheduled for two in March and I think three games in June. Not sure what's happening with the Copa America. Hoping that still goes on, because all that's going on around my birthday and I really love watching a Socceroos game when that's going down. So that's all my sort of local stuff for now. Ned, I don't know what you've got to add, mate. Got a bit of Champions League action tap into?
Yeah, well, as I said, so my team, Melbourne Victory, has been utter shite. If there was relegation in the A-League, we would be absolutely screwed. Having said that, in the Champions League still, because that makes perfect sense, we're doing reasonably well at that, and then obviously the coronavirus kicked in and half the games have now been postponed for about 2 months. So on the plus side, maybe by the time we get to play the games, half our players might have left, the window might be open, we could sign someone who's not shit. It's possible, unlikely. We'll probably just fail miserably there as well. Our women's team's doing very well, though, so that's a positive. They'll probably end up losing the grand final, having finished second.
Good eye. So, you know, positive stuff coming out of Melbourne.
Just keeping the positive stuff. I mean, it's quite nice. Usually it's the opposite way around. Usually it's Palace is all doom and gloom, and Victory's the one that's actually doing something good. So we've sort of rotated that around, giving everyone a go, which is very very fair.
Did you not big up Adelaide United the last pod, and did I not see them concede 36 goals in 4 minutes the other day or something stupid?
I bigged up they did, but the bloke that I bigged up scored the goal for Adelaide. Well, and he's an absolute cracker. So yes the rest of them conceded 5 in 38 minutes, but I bigged up the attacking midfielder. I didn't say he was good at defending. He's still banging in the goals. I stand by my call.
Absolutely shat the bed since you gave him the nod, mate, that's for sure.
Perfect. That's good. Well, in that case, I might give Sydney a nod this week.
All right, so who's the lucky bastard that has the Aussie game today?
I'm on it. And I would like you to link our current manager, an all-time legend and guest and you know, not quite as Palace related for the third one, but our previous guest, Dave Schroy's cousin, altogether.
Dave Schroy's
cousin? And it's going to have something to do with this week's news. That one's probably the hard one to get, so we'll not worry so much about that. But as I said, current manager, a legend of the club, and this week's news.
I'll stick my head out here, seeing as I didn't jump on Craig Moore the other week when I thought that was the answer, and it was. Is this to do with Roy Hodgson being employed on sort of like a 2-week consultancy role for Melbourne City a few years ago?
Nice. It is not. A good try, manager.
This week's news is one of
trying to think of when Roy Hodgson might have linked up with an absolute Palace legend. and that might make things a little bit easier. And Mark, I reckon you're a chance if you can put that bit together.
Tim Cahill?
It's going to have to be short.
No, I think... Sorry, I'm still could thinking him playing for Melbourne City, and I was still fixed on that, and the Dave's cousin reference, which I thought was Melbourne also. I'll get that out of my head. All right, mate, so, yeah, well.
What I will AJ. Say is the Palace legend
Andy
is Andy
Johnson.
Oh, AJ, yeah.
It must be to announce the tour, right? And Dave's cousin must have done... No?
Nah.
All right.
Going back, you got to go back a little bit.
Was Hodgson at Fulham with AJ?
Where would those two have linked up?
So Hodgson's at Fulham with AJ.
Here we go.
And
yep.
Linked to the news this week. Jesus. They both had coronavirus.
Ned, I think you need
to. They both have coronavirus.
Mark's got to get this.
This be a thrilling for the listeners.
His cousin is, so we've got no chance of getting it, Rob. And I've got to go and eat a mango Reese.
Well, you know, well that's not the important part. But so Roy, having a look at when might have been the last time Roy was in Australia.
Oh yeah, I've heard whispers about this.
You possibly would have been. I take it you probably weren't there then. So basically, we probably weren't there, Mark. But it was one of your former club that you used to support might have had a bit of involvement, as did my club, as did. A club that,
mate, hold
Dave's
on.
Cousin
let
Wayne.
Just, let me just stop you right there. Dave's so cousin Wayne. So we've met Dave virtually on a podcast.
Dave's cousin
once.
Wayne.
We have no
he
idea.
He was actually
Wayne
a very, he's actually a very well known. He actually played for Socceroos.
My God,
is that is Wayne Schroy played for the? I'm pretty sure he played
so
for
yeah.
Socceroos.
All right, hang on now. I'm still interested.
Fun fact.
I've been
I thought I'd throw that one in. That one wasn't probably the important bit, but you could have got the rest. So,
I'm
resigning.
Nothing. I've got the Fulham part. That's about it.
So what happened this week for us?
We got announced we're coming out to Australia.
Where are we going
for a pre-season tournament?
Yeah. So what might Fulham
they
have done
out,
when Roy Hodgson was
tour.
Manager and Andy Johnson was playing up front? They did. And what happened? Mark, do you recall any of this as a Gold Coast United fan?
I was never really a fan, mate, because they came around post inception of Brisbane Roar, much like the Titans. If they started at the same time, I would 100% be still a Titans fan and Gold Coast. But Brizzy came around first, and I made my bed, and of course you got to line it. They were just a vague second team
Absolutely.
To me, mate. But
Ned,
I'm thinking
tell us.
Gold Coast.
Fair. Well, they stuffed. They stuffed Roy Hodgson's Fulham team 2-1
right.
In a game. Fulham then came down to play Melbourne Victory. Andy Johnson on the score sheet as they gave us a bit of a touch-up. And then they headed across to play Perth Glory, where they gave Perth a bit of a battering. I think it was 5-0.
Right.
Which was basically
nice.
How they were all...
What was that, mate? Circa 2010?
According to this wonderful article that's written in front of me, which definitely
I think it's maybe slightly earlier than 2010. I'd say.
Maybe. Yeah. Around there somewhere.
Well, they had Europa final in 2010,
so,
I think. So.
Bobby Zamora also got on the score sheet for Mark Schwartz was in goals for Fulham. Bobby Zamora got on the score sheet as well as a horrible ex-Brighton person.
What a riveting game for the listeners.
Danny Murphy.
How about that?
No, oh, absolutely.
Well, awesome. And I mean, everyone that comes to, if we do a live pod, everyone comes to live pod, you wait for the Aussie game at the end there. That'll be a cracker. A live Aussie game.
Absolutely. Well, that will be so
I think that concludes this bumper edition of Palace in Australia, Exiled Eagles. Unless anyone has, anything else they want to add?
Just a quick note. I'll just chime in just in relation to that. Obviously, coronavirus is putting a line through a lot of things at the moment. So we do still hope it very much happens and acting accordingly. So as I said earlier in the pod, anything that comes to hand will definitely be broadcasting on all the social media channels. We'll be keeping everyone abreast of... contact with the club, things that are been notified or put on, and you know, we can't do much more than what we're doing. As Dale said, we're no one official. We're just bloody Palace supporters in suburbia, like everyone else. So trying to orchestrate a good time to be had by all. Please don't pillar us with frivolous shit. You know, we've got everyone's best interest in mind, and just working on general consensus of what people might like to do, and trying to get all that to happen. So yeah, exactly that. Thanks for listening. Dale, good luck. Possible new addition yes. in 2 weeks, mate, before the next pod.
Yeah, so. Mate. Well, just before I do let us all go, there is the slobber knocker, as Jimmy Fletcher called it, is happening in a week on Sunday at Seymour Shore Stadium. Dale, I very much doubt you'll be in attendance, mate, to be honest with you.
I'll be there.
You have a kid.
Just for our listeners, Rob, would you like to elaborate on what a slobber knocker might include?
Absolutely no idea, but it's a fantastic word. What it does include, though, is us, United, Watford and Sunderland fans playing for the Bradley Lowry Cup, so raising some money for a very good cause. So please get down there. I think it kicks great off around course. About 11 o'clock, I think, the first game. So get down there, have yourself a couple of beers, have yourself a couple of sausages, bring your kit, have a run around, discuss. Dale will be there answering all questions, ticky-tick, so you can speak to the man himself, and we'll be giving out Ned's details there for you to bombard him with phone calls. So please get down there. Otherwise, if you can't get down there and you are coming to Brisbane, look, we look forward to seeing you there. We will be obviously podding before that, at least once, maybe twice. As we all know, we are the world's most ad hoc podcast, so who actually knows? So this goes for me to say thank you to the likely lads that are back on here again. Thank you very much.
Rate us
5 stars if we can. If you can't, don't bother, because you can't. Otherwise, up the Palace, and we'll see you all in Brisbane.